Well, we're going to turn back now to the book of Proverbs. And as I mentioned before, when we read through the book of Proverbs, or read various bits of Proverbs, this evening we're looking at that great theme of jealousy or envy. If you remember, the theme of the book of Proverbs overall is to help us to live wisely. And we've said many times on a Sunday evening, haven't we, that none of us want to be fools, do we? None of us want to be fools. We all really want to be wise. And Proverbs is wonderfully helpful in helping us to do just that, to live in a wise way. And sometimes it does that by lifting up to us things, righteous ways of living, we might say. Ways of living that are good for us. Ways of living that help us and drive us on and are encouragement to those around us. And sometimes the book of Proverbs does that. At other times, the book of Proverbs lifts up to us warnings and essentially says, look, if you go down this particular road, here are the consequences that may well happen to you. And this evening, really, that's our theme as we go and look at this theme of jealousy and envy. If we're honest, it's something all of us are prone to, isn't it? It's nice if when we read the Bible, we're able to think, well, this sin never affects me. But I don't think I've ever read the Bible and found that, have you, if we're honest with ourselves? We always find there's at least something of the particular sins that the Bible highlights in all of our lives. And I suspect that I'm not alone in that all of us are prone to this sin. And that's what it is, this sin of jealousy and envy. Well, what do I mean by jealousy and envy? Well, jealousy really is being fearful of losing something that we've already got. So you can think maybe of the stereotype jealous husband, can't you? What's the jealous husband? What's his jealousy all about? Well, he's worried that he's going to lose his wife to, I don't know, a younger man or whoever it happens to be. That's what jealousy is, the fear of losing something that you already got. And what about envy? What's envy? Well, envy is wanting what other people have got, isn't it? Maybe the person who wants somebody else's wife. He's envious of other people's wives, or he's envious of somebody's car, or he's envious of somebody's family, or he's envious of somebody's job, or somebody's salary, or whatever it might be. He wants what other people have got. He's not satisfied with what he has himself. He wants that. He's envious. Now, to a certain extent, of course, it's not wrong to desire other things. It's not wrong, particularly, to desire things that are good. And actually, the book of Proverbs has a lot to say about desire. And before we get into jealousy and envy, let me just read to you a couple of verses about that from Proverbs 11:23. First of all, says, "The desire of the righteous is only good." And in Proverbs 13 and verse 12, we read that hope deferred makes the heart sick, but when the desire comes, it's a tree of life. So we need to be clear right at the very beginning that when we talk about envy, we're not saying that wanting what we don't have is always wrong. We're not saying that, and the book of Proverbs doesn't say that, and the Bible doesn't say that. There is a good way of wanting what we don't have. And we tend to use, at least the Bible often uses the word desire for that. And there's a bad way of wanting it, and we often use the word envy. What's the difference between the two? Well, I've thought about this for some time. It's quite hard to define, isn't it? When does maybe a good desire become something envious? And I think one of the things that we need to note here is the negativity of the emotion, isn't it? That if we desire something in a positive way, it's something that maybe we'd pray for. It's something that maybe we'd work towards. It's something we'd maybe ask others to help us with. And those positive ways of going about it, looking that we might be able to gain something positive itself. So it's all about positive things. Envy, on the other hand, can often bring about negative emotions. We'll look at that. It brings a restlessness. It brings an emptiness. It brings about dissatisfaction and so on. And it eats away at us. And rather than it being something positive, well, it would be really good for me and for others if I was to be able to gain this or have that or do this or whatever it might be. Instead of being something positive, it becomes something negative. So there's maybe one of the differences between desire and envy. And one of the things that the book of Proverbs is trying to teach us is to understand those differences so that we can assess our own lives and we can look at the things that we want. And we can ask ourselves the question, well, is this a positive desire? Or have I slipped into envy now? And I'm just wanting what other people have got. Well, I wonder if this, therefore, is a problem that you do face, this problem of jealousy and envy. Maybe it's a significant problem for you. Maybe it's a smaller issue, but probably one that all of us face. So what the book of Proverbs does is it gives us some warnings, first of all, about jealousy and envy. And one of the things the book of Proverbs is brilliant at is helping us to look ahead. That's one of the things that's probably most difficult to do in life, isn't it? It's always interesting at the end of the year, maybe you've just been doing this in the last week or so, you get these reviews of the year, don't you? And it tells you all the main and the important things that have happened over the year. One of the things that I often like to do is to go back to the beginning of the year, January 2013, and to look up what the same pundits were predicting for the year ahead and see how much they got right by the end. And very often, it's not very much, is it? And we have all these bold predictions. We had them again at the beginning of 2014. This is going to be the year when this happens or this doesn't happen or whatever it might be. And so often, we get it wrong. We don't know the future. It's hard for us to see where things are going. But what the book of Proverbs does is it helps us to do that. It helps us to say, look, if you set yourself in this particular direction, then that's where you're going to end up. So as we're orientating ourselves, as it were, if we orientate ourselves along the lines of jealousy and envy, we can't predict exactly where we'll end up, but the book of Proverbs gives us a pretty good idea of the direction in which that's leading in. And this is what it says about that direction. It's the first warning, really, from the book of Proverbs. It's chapter 14 and verse 30. Here's the verdict of Proverbs, the kind of big headline, I suppose you would call it, that jealousy and envy ruins you. That's the headline. Chapter 14, verse 30 says, a sound heart is life to the body, but envy is rottenness to the bones. It's a wonderful picture, isn't it? Rottenness to the bones. It eats you up. Do you know something of that feeling? That desire that you've got maybe for something and it's slipped into envy or jealousy and you just want what what you don't need, or maybe probably what you shouldn't have anyway. And it gives you that emptiness, doesn't it? That all you can think about, instead of thinking about the things that you do enjoy and that you have got, all you can think about is what you don't enjoy and what you haven't got. And you lose the pleasure of all the good things that you have. Because your mind is filled with this desire for something beyond, something that you don't have. And this is what Proverbs is saying, that envy is rottenness to the bones. It just eats away at your inside, and ultimately it leads to ruin. Well, that's a pretty good reason to pay attention then, isn't it, to what the book of Proverbs says about this topic. If that's true, if envy is rottenness to the bones, then all of us need to avoid it, don't we? We need to keep away from this. We need to make sure that we don't go down this road. And here is the danger for us, isn't it? It's so easy to slip into. It's so easy to slide into, in just small ways maybe at first, has become a little bit envious, a little bit jealous of others. And then finally it doesn't take too long before that builds and it builds and it builds. And all of a sudden we're on exactly the road that the writer of Proverbs tells us about here. You see, this will ruin us if we let it. Well, what's the second warning then that we get from the book of Proverbs? It's another serious warning. It's in chapter 27 and verse 4. And if you link it with the first one, it becomes more serious again. So Proverbs 27 and verse 4 essentially says it's almost impossible to stop. Can you see that? Wrath is cruel and anger a torrent. It's easy to picture that now, isn't it, with watching TV in recent weeks as the floods have swept down. We've seen torrents of water, haven't we? So there's anger, and anger is a torrent of water. And you think of the Environment Agency trying to stop these torrents of water. And in some places they've just about managed it. In other places they haven't got a chance. But look at what the writer says here. Wrath is cruel and anger a torrent. But who is able to stand before jealousy? In other words, it's even harder. to stop jealousy than it is to stop anger. That's what's being said. So if you imagine these great torrents of water that are going down the streets, it's easier to stop them, the torrents, than it is to stop jealousy. What a dangerous thing it is then. You can see why the book of Proverbs warns us, don't you? Because this thing leads to ruin and it's almost impossible to stop. So what's the lesson, therefore? What's the point? What's Proverbs trying to say to us? Well, it's very clear, isn't it? Don't get on the road at all. That's clearly what it's saying. If it ruins you and it's almost impossible to stop, we need to make sure we never fall into the trap in the first place. We need to keep a million miles away from envy and jealousy because it will ruin us and because it's almost impossible to stop. So the advice, therefore, that Proverbs is going to give us about how to deal with that, I hope will be even more important and useful. So how do we do it? What are the dangers? What are the sorts of things that we might envy? Well, the book of Proverbs pulls out two things in particular that we're prone to envy. One of them is riches, and one of them is wickedness, or the spoil that goes with wickedness sometimes. We're going to look at them separately. So first of all, let's look at this danger of envying riches. And there's a wonderful section at the beginning of Proverbs 23 that gives us this wonderful advice. I've never read advice like this before. I've never needed advice, if I'm honest, like this before. Chapter 23, verse 1. When you sit down to eat with a ruler, did you know that advice was in the Bible? How you should eat with a king. There's the advice. It's in the Bible. I've never needed it. Those of you who have been to Buckingham Palace and the garden party, I hope you read this first. But I've never needed that advice. But it's a picture, isn't it, of how we should respond to this danger of riches. So when you sit down to eat with a ruler, so here's the picture. This is being spoken to ordinary people like you and me. And of course, in the book of Proverbs, in the time that was written, 900 odd years before the birth of Jesus, that during this time, most of the people had very simple diets, didn't they? They didn't have rich foods. They just ate vegetables mainly and wheat and so on. And that was their diet. So kings, of course, ate very differently. They had a tremendously rich diet, and they would have meat and eggs and all of this kind of rich food. So here's this peasant, I suppose, you and me, and we're sitting down now to eat with a king. Well, I'm getting hungry now just thinking of all of these meats and eggs and so on, and wishing I'd rather more tea before I came out. But look at what it says. Consider carefully what is before you. And now look at these really strong words in verse 2. And put a knife to your throat if you're a man given to appetite. Well, I'm afraid that is me, a man given to appetite. So in this illustration, there's a risk here because my eyes light up when I can imagine, even never mind see, all this wonderful rich food. Now, what's the point? The point is, it's going to do me harm, isn't it? That here am I as an ordinary person, an ordinary peasant, used to ordinary food, and suddenly all of these riches are before me, and the temptation is, like you do at the all-you-can-eat buffet, make sure you get your money's worth, and in it goes and keeps on going. So if you're a man given to appetite, do not desire it his delicacies, for they are deceptive food. You see, we can see all of these riches before us, and we just want to fill our stomachs. Well, as we said, this is an illustration. He's not talking about just those examples of when we are sitting in front of kings and eating, but he's talking about those examples when maybe wealth is paraded in front of us. Maybe you've got a rich brother or sister who's got some big job in the city or something and drives a Porsche or a Ferrari and comes up and sits outside your house and you're thinking, well, that's what I want. I have this desire for the riches that he's got, or all of the different things that maybe are in our minds. Maybe it's something much simpler, perhaps, that you desire. Maybe the riches don't appeal very much to you, but maybe it's something as simple as the fact that here's somebody who's incredibly healthy and fit and active. Maybe they're a similar age to you, or even a little bit older, and they seem to be free of cares and worries, and yet you've got struggles with your health and your family or whatever it may be, and the richness of the simplicity, it seems to you, of their life. You just crave that and desire that. Well, Proverbs here is warning us about that. And he says in verse 3, do not desire his delicacies, for they're deceptive food. Deceptive food. What does he mean by that? Well, look at verses 4 and 5. Do not overwork to be rich. Do not overwork to be rich because of your own understanding. Cease. So what he's saying is here, look, it's okay to desire things that are good, like the rich food that's in front of us. It's okay to desire health. It's okay to desire happiness. Those are good things. But we mustn't overwork to gain those things. And if we're somebody who is tempted, as it were, often to overdo it, so our eyes would light up and that's all we could think about at the moment would be that one thing, then we're to put a knife to our throat in order to make sure we don't end up on this road of jealousy that will ruin us and is almost impossible to stop. So we need some wisdom here, don't we? We need to examine our own hearts. We need to ask ourselves, well, where are the temptations for me? Because they'll be different for all of us, won't they? Maybe some will be temptation over clothes, let's say. Others, temptations over money. Perhaps others, temptation over cars or other people's happiness or food or whatever it might be. But we need to look at ourselves. And when we're in a situation where we can see the riches in that area where we're weak, then we put a knife to our throat when we're given to appetite in that area. And we're given an encouragement to do that. You can see it in verse 5. Will you set your eyes on that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. It's another lovely expression, isn't it? They fly away like an eagle toward heaven. And those who chase after riches know that, don't they? The bankers with all their bonuses and so on, chasing after riches. It seems they've got it within their grasp for a while, but then the losses suddenly mount. Maybe you've had that experience, that you're chasing after what you desire more than anything else. And it seems as though it's always just ahead, and yet always out of reach. And the things, therefore, that we desire the most, sometimes they can almost be a fabrication in our own minds. Going back to the illustration about food now, maybe you had this experience over Christmas. You were really looking forward. Maybe there's a particular something that you really look forward to at Christmas. There's a long list for me, I'm afraid. But I'll give you just one example. McDonald's's festive pies, all right? I can't use an example from home because I'm about to say it didn't live up to expectations. So that's why I'm going to McDonald's rather than anywhere else. So McDonald's festive pies, they only come out in December, all right? So you've got to wait 11 months before McDonald's festive pies come out. But you know, I've been looking forward to it so much, and then I saw the sign, McDonald's festive pies. But it just didn't taste quite as nice as I'd remembered from the year before. There was just a little something lacking and I couldn't put my finger on it. And I think part of the problem was I'd imagined it to be far better than it really was. And you see, that's the problem with jealousy and envy. That very often when we don't have something, we build up this idea, this picture of it in our mind. It would be wonderful if we had so and so. And we start, as it were, to almost enjoy in our mind what it would be like if we only had so-and-so. But the point is, it's not real. It's just a figment of our imagination. And it's better in our mind than it is in reality. And that's why the writer here says that riches make themselves wings. That's why he says that you set your eyes on that which is not. Because what we're really desiring is a figment of our own imagination rather than the reality that's in front of us. And that's a terrible danger then. And the danger is that we will never get what it is that we desire, and we'll end up embittered and dissatisfied and empty, and we're on that road to ruin that we've already described. So we need to be very careful about envy and riches, is what the book of Proverbs is telling us, because the reality may be very different from what we imagine. Well, there's another thing, as we mentioned earlier, that we often envy. It's not just the reality of riches or the imagination of riches, and we envy and that, and we want riches. That's one danger. We've looked at that already. But there's a second danger, that we envy wickedness. We envy wickedness. Or actually, what's interesting is that the writer of Proverbs and the Bible more generally says that we envy the wicked. Not necessarily envy and wickedness, but envy the wicked. What's it saying? Well, let me give you an example that might help. Proverbs 24 now, verses 1 and 2. Do not be envious of evil men. It's quite clear, isn't it? Nor desire to be with them, for their heart devises violence and their lips talk of troublemaking. So it's quite clear warning, isn't it? It's quite stark. Just don't do it. Quite often the book of Proverbs is that blunt with us. Don't do this. It's wrong. Don't do this. It'll lead to ruin. So don't be envious of evil men. But you might think, well, why on earth would anyone be envious of evil men? Is anyone here envious of Adolf Hitler? I'm not. Are you envious of the wicked men that have gone to and fro in this world? Are you envious of Pol Pot? Are you envious of Ian Brady? I'm not. So why would we be envious of evil men? Well, the point is, we're not envious of those men now, are we? Because they've met their downfall. But if we'd have gone back to Germany in the 1930s, there would be plenty of men who were envious of Adolf Hitler in those times. Why? Because it seemed during that period, particularly in the 1930s and I guess into the early 1940s, that Adolf Hitler was enjoying all of the trappings of power and all of the adulation of the people around him, and his wickedness essentially was working, if I can put it like that. He was getting what he wanted, and he was reveling in it, and he was enjoying all the pleasures that that can bring. And there were plenty of people who envied him then, and not very many people who envy him now. And actually, that's exactly the message of Proverbs. Let's go back to chapter 23 and verse 17, and you'll see that that indeed is what is said. Do not let your heart envy sinners, but be zealous for the fear of the Lord all the day, for surely there is a hereafter. Your hope will not be cut off. Do you understand what the writer's saying? Yeah, it may be that those who are wicked in the short term have gain, as they would understand it. They maybe get power or money or pleasure or women or whatever it might be. There is this gain. But note, this is the vital thing. We're to have an eternal perspective. I mean, that's, I guess, could apply to almost any area of life, couldn't it? The one thing that rescues us, I suppose, from going down this road of wickedness and evil and things that are wrong is this: if we can only have an eternal perspective, if we could only see things from God's eyes, if we could only see things from the perspective of heaven and of eternity, because what we're being told very clearly in 23:18, surely there is a hereafter. There is coming a day when this will be dealt with. This will not last, is the message. And whatever the riches and the pleasure that the wicked are enjoying now, it won't last. That is absolutely guaranteed by God himself. Look at chapter 24 and verse 19. It says it even more clearly. Do not fret because of evildoers, nor be envious of the wicked, for there will be no prospect for the evil man. The lamp of the wicked will be put out. Do you see how blunt and clear the writer is, the book of Proverbs is? It will not last. So what we're being told, therefore, is we're being reminded, look, there is more to life than the riches that wickedness might bring. There is more to life than that. You think about those maybe who are criminals and they have all of these things. Some of them, they maybe have the money, they have the power and the influence. They maybe have the cars and the big houses in Spain or wherever it might be, and people at their beck and call. They have all of this. Do you want it? Well, not at that cost. Not at that cost. The lamp of the wicked will be put out. It simply isn't worth it. That's what we're being told. There is more to life than houses and cars and holidays. There's more to life than that. And so what is it that God is offering? Well, he wants to make clear that he does take sides. Did you know that? That God takes sides? He wants to make that clear. Look at chapter 3 and verse 31. Do not envy the oppressor, we're told there, and choose none of his ways. It's the same message again. Why is that? Verse 33, the curse of the Lord is on the house of the wicked, but he blesses the home of the just. God takes sides, in other words. And he wants us to know, he wants everyone to know, that he is against the wicked. And if that's what we choose, if we say, well, because of my desire for houses or cars or whatever it might be, I'm willing to do things that are wrong. And maybe we wouldn't become a master criminal and go and hide away in Spain in some great villa somewhere. And maybe we're not clever enough or wicked enough to do that. But maybe if it's just a question of declaring or not declaring something on our tax form, or forgetting about something convenient when we're filling in a benefit form, or whatever it might be, even just in those small ways, God wants us to know that he is against those who are wicked. The curse of the Lord is on the house of the wicked. And it may be some time before that curse, as it were, is realized, but that time will surely come. Verse 34 of Proverbs 3, surely he scorns the scornful, but gives grace to the humble. The wise shall inherit glory, but shame shall be the legacy of fools. You see, the message is very clear. There is more to life than riches. There is more to life than the fruits of wickedness. And in fact, this theme is one that comes actually in many places in the Bible. And as we draw to a close, I want to point you to just two of the other places where this occurs. It occurs in two Psalms, this thought of their envying evildoers. And it's easy to remember the two Psalms because one of them is Psalm 37 and one of them is Psalm 73. So we'll go to Psalm 37 on page 498 first of all, because here's the antidote, as it were, that we've seen warnings, but now we need an antidote. It's one thing to be warned away from something, but the Bible also encourages towards other things. And let's take a look at that now in Psalm 37. Do not fret because of evildoers, nor be envious of the workers of iniquity. So it's exactly the same theme, do you see? And we're told exactly the same thing, verse 2. For they shall be cut down like the grass, and wither as the green herb. So we're being told that there's more to life than this. Their end will come, and it's not going to be pleasant. Verses 3, 4, and 5 now. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land. Feed on his faithfulness. Delight yourself also in the Lord, and he shall give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. You see, that's the antidote. This is what we do instead. This is the way in which we ought to live. The way that Psalm 37 verses 3 to 5 paint in such glorious colours for us. Can you see what the psalmist is saying? Can you see what David is saying? We don't need to go after evil. We don't need to do that. Yes, they might get cars and homes and women and money and power and whatever it might be. They might get all of that. But don't worry about that. Because what do we get instead? What's on offer instead of that? Well, look at verse 3. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land. He's thinking now of the promised land, obviously. Feed on his faithfulness. You can almost hear, can't you, the wicked, the mocker saying, faithfulness, faithfulness. That won't feed your belly. That won't give you anything. And yet those of us who have tasted the faithfulness of the Lord would disagree with that with all of our heart, wouldn't we? Oh, to know that faithfulness. So here is this person, this wicked person, and they're cutting people adrift in order to get what they want, and they're trampling over the needs of others in order to feed themselves, and they've got maybe lots of power and people around them, but no real friends. But to know the faithfulness of one who loves us, to the faithfulness of a friend, to know one who is willing to die in our place that we might be redeemed and rescued. That's something that can be delighted on, comes in. That's something that can feed the soul. And now you see, we've got this eternal perspective. We realize it's not just about the body and what can feed the body, but we realize we have a soul and we need what feeds the soul. And knowing the Lord himself and knowing his faithfulness towards us, his covenant care and his love. You know how much, don't you, within a home, how much the care of the parents contributes towards the well-being of the child. And a child who is neglected, it doesn't matter how much stuff they've got, does it? It doesn't matter how many toys they've got. If they're neglected by their parents and don't know the care of the love, then they're going to really struggle as a child. And this is what the psalm is saying. It doesn't matter about the money and it doesn't matter about the toys, as it were, that we might have, but to know the love of God, to know his faithfulness, it feeds our soul. And what then can we find, verse 4? Well, we can find true delight. Delight in the Lord. And he shall give you the desires of your heart. That's a wonderful verse, isn't it? But it's a verse that comes with a condition. We very often read, don't we, he shall give you the desires of your heart. We forget what comes beforehand. Delight yourself also in the Lord, and he shall give you the desires of your heart. What we're being told there is this, that if we desire God, we will receive that back, as it were. Delight yourself also in the Lord, and he shall give you the desires of your heart. It doesn't say, delight yourself also in money, and he will give you the desires of your heart. It doesn't work, does it? But if our delight is in the Lord, then that's what he gives. This is the one thing that is guaranteed. You could grasp after money all your life and maybe never get it. But you know what? If you seek after the Lord with all your heart, lean not on your own understanding, if you seek him, you will find him. If you seek him with all your heart, you see? And that's a wonderful promise from God, that here is something that can be fulfilled. So whereas these other things, we might grasp after them and never get them, here is something that is guaranteed that God himself has promised. And you know, with those other things before, we could grasp after them and we might find eventually, even if we did get them, that they weren't as good as what we imagined them to be. But you know what? This is different. Because here, what the Lord offers is greater. Do you remember what the Apostle Paul says in the book of Ephesians? That he is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine, according to his power that is at work within us. You see, God can offer more than we can imagine, not less. This is a wonderful promise of God. And very quickly, as we finish, Psalm 73, one of my favorite psalms, maybe it's yours as well, deals with a similar theme, this time a psalm of Asaph. And Asaph is struggling with this whole problem. He's jealous and envious of the wicked, and he's having a really tough time over it. And he spends almost the whole psalm telling us how difficult he's finding it. But then, right at the end, he says, surely you set them in slippery places. This is verse 18. You cast them down to destruction. Oh, how they're brought to desolation as in a moment. So do you see, he knows the same thing that David has written in Psalm 37 and Solomon or others have written in the book of Proverbs. He knows the same thing. But look at how then he responds when he realizes this. Verse 23. Nevertheless, I am continually with you. You hold me by my right hand. Can you feel the security that he's got? That stability, that covenant care of God. You will guide me with your counsel. Isn't that wonderful? As he knows the personal help from the Lord. And afterwards, receive me into glory. Again, it's wonderful, isn't it? He doesn't just say, and afterwards, I'll go to heaven. That would be amazing. But he knows more than that. Afterward, you will receive me in glory, is what he's saying. So verse 25, whom have I in heaven but you? And there is none upon earth that I desire beside you. My flesh and my heart fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. You see, that's the antidote to jealousy and envy. Because the world says you can't have it all. Well, in a sense, of course, that's right. But here what the Bible is saying is that in Jesus Christ, in the Lord God, we can have more than we could ever imagine or dream of. We can have the joy of knowing Him. We can have the joy of sins forgiven and of peace with God. That solidity of knowing that we're loved and cared for. That certainty of knowing that we're on our way to glory. And compared to that, then all the riches of the world mean nothing at all, do they? And this is what the Lord offers to us. So you see, those of us who struggle maybe with jealousy and envy and difficulty and struggle, we need to be reminded, don't we, of all the glory of heaven. We need to be reminded of what we've received in Christ Jesus. We need to be reminded of what He has achieved and what He has given in order that we might receive the things that are promised here in the Psalms. And we need to be able to say, don't we, as the psalmist says in verse 28, it is good for me to draw near to God. I have put my trust in the Lord God.